Starting out on Timothy, and we're going to be looking at chapter 1 today. We spent quite a bit of time studying 1 Timothy, and now we get to study and take a look at 2 Timothy. Who is Paul addressing this to?
Timothy.
Yeah, this is Timothy. Same Timothy in chapter, or 1 Timothy. This is the second book to it, second time. 1 Timothy was written to Timothy by Paul. Where was Paul living at that time?
Paul's in jail. No, with the first. Oh, the Macedonia.
Yeah, it was in Macedonia, wasn't it? And this was somewhere around 57, 58 AD. And Timothy was a very young preacher. Paul left him in Ephesus. And Paul also gave him some instructions about what to look for and how to handle some discord that was going on in the church in Ephesus. Is anything new?
No.
As far as Paul is concerned, he's never run into problems before, has he? Never run into problems in Ephesus, has he? But he knew what was coming. And he left Timothy there for a purpose. And he warned Timothy of what is going to happen. And sure enough, it is, things come true. Yeah, they did. Paul or Timothy had his hands full. So we know that 1 Timothy was written by Paul while he was in Macedonia. But this time, where's Paul writing from?
Prison.
Yeah, he's in prison in Rome, isn't he? So Paul is writing the second letter to Timothy from his prison in Rome. Timothy has now had several years' experience in handling the problems that have arisen in Ephesus and his work there. Because we know that this letter, 2 Timothy, was written by Paul while he was in Rome, and this was around 64, 65, right in that neighborhood. So approximately 10 years have gone past. Timothy is still in Ephesus, but Paul has completed his journeys, and now he's in prison in Rome. While Paul has addressed this 1 Timothy book to this young preacher, he's also outlined the qualifications for elders, deacons, and their wives. Also in chapter 6, he reflects on the behavior of slaves, which is a common thing back in those days. And the behavior and the behavior of the masters of these slaves. So we've studied that. And several years now, as I mentioned it fast, Paul is shortly to be executed. And who's the emperor there in Rome at the time?
Nero.
Yeah, it's Emperor Nero, but and he's just starting out his emperorship, shall I say. He's not been in power that long. And each year or each day that he is in power, he gains more power and more confidence in what he can and cannot do. And while there are some limitations on his power, he wants to actually anti-Christ, wasn't it? He wanted to take care of the problem as it, and you could see it spreading like wildfire. And
recording in progress.
Okay. Should I start over? I know you guys are going to see that too. So anyway, several years have now passed. He writes this letter to Timothy to encourage him to stay the course, to continue in his faith. Let's look at the questions here. I'm reading it upside down. It doesn't work right. Was this book written to just Timothy? Anybody can answer? Yeah. Or Lee Carter, right?
Yes, it is. It's for the benefit of the church there, too.
Yeah, he addresses it to Timothy just like he did in the prior letter, doesn't he? His intended audience, I think, was Timothy, but I think he had written this letter to Timothy with the expectation that Timothy would share with others, teach others what Paul was sharing with him. Both of these books, for Timothy and 2 Timothy, are very short letters. In some respects, I'm sorry that it was broken down into chapters, because it seems to me as people go through and read one chapter and they're starting on the next, it's just a continuation of what is being said. I think when it breaks down into chapters, I think it kind of loses some of its effectiveness. And that's too bad. Of course, they didn't write in chapters back in those days. So this was done later on. Question number two. Paul states that he's reminded of Timothy's sincere faith. In verse 6, is Paul gently criticizing Timothy for his silence or his weakness in the faith? What do you think about that? Now, Paul has spent all this time through 1 Timothy, through 6 chapters there, and here he is with another small letter. 4 chapters. But here in this first part of this 2 Timothy, is he criticizing Timothy for his lack of faith or his sincerity or his silence?
I think he's giving him encouragement to do what he needs to do.
I'm sorry?
He's giving him encouragement to do what he needs to do.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, well, in verse 5, he is talking about the sincere faith that first dwelled in his grandmother and his mother. And then he says in verse 6, for this reason, I remind you to kindle afresh the gift of God. So it is, as Eileen says, it's an encouragement to continue and to grow on what he's already been given in life. And maybe he's not getting that in Ephesus, but he's being told, you've had it your whole life. Hang on to it. And he's reminded that the laying on of hands that that's a gift from God, so he has the right to not be timid in spirit. He needs to be forceful with what he has been taught from a young age.
Well, that's exactly true. Anybody else have any comments on that? Jim?
Well, I'm reminded of the apostles when Jesus was arrested. So when they had Jesus with them, they were bold. They were brave. And when Jesus was arrested, they became what? Fearful. And in fact, when Jesus was put to death, they became more fearful. And it wasn't until Jesus' reappearing and the departing of the Holy Spirit that they gained their boldness again. And I think this is Paul's in prison. Odds are he's not going to make it out of prison, even though he desires to. And we read that Paul, is mindful of Timothy's tears. I think Timothy's tears are in fear for the loss of Paul, his mentor. And when we have a mentor, especially when we're young and we lose that person, then we can become fearful and we can backslide and we can, forget that we are empowered enough to go ahead and push on. So to me, when I read this, that's Paul being mindful of human tendency when that person that we count on isn't there anymore.
Yeah, and I think Paul, and as we go through this chapter, Paul mentions the tears that they both shed. And I think he was referring there to the destiny that's in store very shortly for Paul. He's not a spring chicken anymore, is he? He's sitting up there, and he's had a super hard life, and he constantly travels throughout that whole area, and that's mostly done by walking. And so the guy had to be pretty tough over the years, but he suffered a lot too, didn't he? Constantly reading of the battles that he had, beaten and thrown in jail and shipwrecked and everything else. So he had a tough life. But here he knows, I think, at this point, he looked back on his time in Rome. He was actually arrested, but he had his own house. He had servants to take care of him. This time, Nero's in charge. This time, he's not only in prison, but he's chained up too. And so I think he is well aware of what is coming up. So he's ready to depart. And remember, he says, my day of parting is soon. I've fought the good faith. I've kept the faith. Therefore, a crown of righteousness is laid up for me. So he's ready to die. And there's some purity being said between him and Timothy because of this close relationship that they have. So I think he's telling Timothy to kindle afresh the gift of God, fan the embers into flame. So they're smoldering there like that if you fan the embers into flame. So he's telling Timothy to do this. And I think that it wasn't really a criticism. I think what he's doing here is just giving him some encouragement. And I know that as we have disagreements and becoming discouraged in our lives? Yeah, all the time. How do we fan the flames in our lives. How do we do that? We have to identify the inputs, don't we? Yeah. What would be the inputs in our lives? Anybody? Well, each of us have different abilities, don't we? That the next person doesn't have. We have abilities that are common to all of us, but we also have abilities that are unique in our life. I remember a long time ago, had a young man who was a Christian, who was a Down syndrome person, had some difficulties. But he was an absolute monster when it came to believing in the Lord and talking to others as best he could. He had some pamphlets that he got, and he went around from door to door, many neighborhoods that he could possibly come to, handing out these pamphlets and talking about Jesus. Member of the church. He could do that. He had the special ability to do that. But he passed away, and there were hundreds, hundreds of people that showed up at his funeral. So he had a unique ability and he took advantage of it. And how, we all have abilities, don't we? How can we use those abilities? How many? Yeah.
I think that it shows you that if Timothy could have embers in his life that needed to be fanned, that we all do. And I go back to Cain's offering that was rejected by God because it wasn't correct. And God told him, he says, "Why is your countenance fallen? Just do what's right." And this is the same sort of thing in a different way. Is you've done it before, you can do it again. Just fan the flames, do what's right. So too many people go, "Oh, I'm too far down this road. I give up. I can't do that again." And this is an encouragement, like Eileen says, to fan it, to start it out, take those baby steps, and get going again.
We all have our own. And we need to fan them in the ground. And then how do we do? We need to build upon those abilities that we have. We need to study. We need to learn those things as best we can. And we can look at others that have their abilities and we can learn from them. But we have one goal in mind, and that is to fan these embers in the flame for God's glory. That's our duty. And when we just look at and be lackadaisical, or we allow them to smolder and don't do anything about them, then that's not to our benefit, is it? So we need to be cautious about how we go about I've lost my word I want to use. So anyway, let's look at question number 3. What does the Spirit of God give us now, as well as Paul and Timothy in their 2,000-year past up? Is it any different today?
Perfect. Well, I think he gave us the word. He gave us the Bible. That's how he's going to help us.
Okay.
happen. Verse 7, for God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but the power and love and discipline.
That's right. Verse 7. In verse 8, Paul tells Timothy to not be ashamed to testify about the Lord. How about us today? Does it fit us today? When it comes to testifying about the Lord, do we find ourselves timid about that? Well, I have. Opportunities come available and you don't take advantage of it. It's really disappointing. And I chose four. But when I was in the service, I had an operation and I was recovered in the hospital, at a military hospital, and there was an old boy well up in years, 3 or 4 beds. It was kind of a dormitory type thing. And there was this old guy up in years. He was sitting on the side of the bed up at the front of the ward. And he just kept walking back and forth, back and forth. And he said, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Eat hours. That's all he said. Scared to death. And I had an opportunity right there and I didn't take advantage of it. And I've never forgotten that the opportunity presented to me, I let pass. It's always kind of bugged me over that. It just comes up and makes me understand, and I guess I'm human like everybody else, but I was pretty timid about talking about Jesus. And in some instances, I still am. That's a shame for me. But we need to be very, very forthgoing, strong in our faith, and be willing to share the good news with anybody who is double cross. I never thought a strong point for me was to go knock on the door and talk to people. Just, and so in some respects, I admire these young Mormon boys, girls who go out and walk the streets. We had a visitor last Saturday, I think it was, from Jehovah's Witnesses. A couple of ladies came knocking at the door. And while I don't agree with most of what they preach, I do admire their willingness to get out and beat the streets. That's a tough, tough way to spread the gospel. Tough way. And always it's kind of hard for me to think that way. How do we do that? How many people here brought us door to door?
I've gone door to door as a Jehovah's Witness. As a little girl with my mom.
Yeah. You know, they will do, is that an effective way to teach?
Sometimes.
Effective way to contact people?
Sometimes.
You know, the Mormon church has grown leaps and bounds. Then you drive by their church buildings, or you drive by their temples, whatever, parking lots full, jammed full.
They're building a new one down by us, too.
Yes, they are. That's a temple. Yeah, they call, I think, local congregations are called stakes or something like that.
Wards.
Wards.
Yeah, I have wards. And this is a big-time temple that they're building over there in Springfield.
Yeah. But they're out looking for people who don't know anything about God, so they can just lead them.
Yeah. But why aren't we out there banging doors? You know.
We've done it in the past.
And if we were effective in our job, effective in our efforts, this building would be full. Should be. Might share with our close friends and our relatives. But not many of us are willing to go out there and bang on the door. So anyway, that's something that we need to work on.
Hey, Ron. So I worked in...
Oh, David, yeah.
I worked in Idaho last year, and it's predominantly women.
Yeah.
Southeast Idaho, and also the travel in Salt Lake City, where there are many temples, and the temples are pretty fancy, pretty amazing. But I was in the airport one time, and there was probably 500 people, all young, parents, and I was like, there's some rock star or athlete or somebody coming through, but they were all lined up, and it was the Mormon missionaries that were coming back from training. And as they came through the gates out of the airport, you know, they were hooting and hollering and hugging. And every time one came through, they were hooting and hollering. It was very impressive to see the amount of, see what was going on. But part of the reason the Mormon church is so successful, other than it's a money machine, is family. We're very focused on families. It's certain night of the week that nobody does anything. We're doing family stuff. Pocatello, Idaho, where I was, they had a major fire. And the next day, they had 3,000 Mormons with chainsaws cutting down trees and helping their neighbors. They're always helping their neighbors, always helping each other. So, I mean, they've got some really strong traits. They got some weird ideologies, and you know, the thing that I thought was weird is that all their underwear that covers their bodies is sent out. Very common. Costco sells it in Salt Lake City. But they're very focused on family, which is a plus.
I think the tour of duty here for the young people, I think that's been 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing they do, is after we get out of high school. You know, young, mostly men, we don't see too many young women, but mostly young men, they always travel in pairs. We see around here a lot of bicycles and that type of activities. But they're very thorough. Their support is not from the church. Their support is from the family. And they commit to 2 years efforts, and that's paid off to a great degree. Unfortunately, they don't know a whole lot about the Bible. They hand out the thrill of death, hand out the Book of Mormon. But you start asking them a few questions, and they're not that familiar with the Bible. And their religion contradicts what God's for you. Says, and it's kind of interesting that I asked a young man one time, you know, how old are you? I'm 20. Got kids? No, of course not. Are you married? No.
Raised an elder.
But you're called an elder, is it? You're introduced yourself as an elder.
Yeah.
You ever read 1 Timothy?
Mm-hmm.
You studied the Bible? Yeah. Book of Mormon, but not the Bible. And then you start referring and studying with them with the Bible. They do their best to try to get you off of that and get you into the Book of Mormon. But if you can make them stand with the Bible, you can soon make them sick a little bit, but very, very difficult. But you appreciate the enthusiasm that they have and the willingness to go out there and spread their beliefs. And that's what we ought to be doing. We ought to be out there doing the same thing, even if you get together with somebody else and take one or two people with you. So knock on doors. I mean, that's an ability some of us have. Maybe not all of us. But it is an ability that some of us have that we're not taking advantage of. And I'm saying we too. Not you guys, that's we.
Ron?
Yes?
I think that, you know, each and every one of us has to take a hard look at our lives. I mean, this hits home for me. I had several family members pass away that were not in good standings with the Lord.
Me too.
But I don't think we need to knock on doors. I think we need to talk to the people that we know.
Yeah.
You know, I think of just the opportunities. I have the same waitresses at the same restaurants on the same days forever. I have the same young ladies make my coffee and come to me with questions about things. We have so many opportunities in our lives, and so we have to ask ourselves why. Why do I not take advantage of those things? And then we have to say, you know, we look at, my father-in-law said one time, he said, you know, if a Baptist used the front door to walk into a church building, a member of the Church of Christ would have to go through the side door or the back door because we don't want to do what they're doing. We might not agree with a lot of these other congregations, but there's a lot of stuff that they just do better than we do. My daughter has a friend. I coached her in soccer. And this young lady, her front door is always open. If you need something, just go in and get it. She has a business at her house, but she takes her business and she's made it to where on the nights that she does ladies' Bible study, that these young single mothers have a place for their children to go play. And she's made it her mission to bring people to God. And I think oftentimes we look and go, yeah, well, but they don't have the right views on baptism. No, but they're working harder than we are. They're working harder than we are. I mean, what are we doing? We have, on average, 64 people in attendance on Sunday. We don't support classes that are in people's homes. We don't support evening classes. We don't support Wednesday classes. You know, we're lazy and apathetic. So each and every one of us has to look at ourselves and say, what are we doing? And then recognize. So what Paul's telling Timothy here is, yeah, I got thrown in jail for preaching the gospel. And that's scary. And Timothy, as a young person, is like, man, if I stand up in the pulpit and I'm bold and I'm strong, I'm either going to get thrown in jail or, what we think, we're going to lose friends. We're going to lose a position in our job. We're going to lose the girls that make my coffee aren't going to be my friends anymore. I'm not going to get invited to their weddings. Whatever it is. But we have these opportunities and we don't take advantage of them. And we have to ask why. And if we know the answer, then we need to do something about that. You know, we need to ask, okay, why don't I bring people with me? And if I have an answer, then I probably better address that answer. Okay. You know, maybe it's that we just go, well, maybe our classes just aren't that uplifting. Or, you know, maybe our, whatever it is, we have to deal with those types of things. But we have so many opportunities other than these four walls for us to reach out and to touch other people's lives.
Yeah, knocking on doors with, you know, an ability some of us might have, but it's not only a good idea, as you mentioned. How many times have you talked to the neighbor? or your friends. I remember Sharon's brother Garner. He was on it. He didn't make it out of the hospital. And he was pretty frail. And a nurse, we were there visiting, and the nurse came in and she introduced herself. He introduced himself. I'm Gar Smith. And he says, "Can I ask you a question? Are you a Christian?" Mm-hmm. And the guy's on his deathbed. That was the thought that he had. Are you a Christian? And when she said no, he went, "Oh, you need to be a Christian." So he never gave up his preaching or his teaching, even though he never left that bed. Kind of made me ashamed of my efforts that were so weak and so forth. But, we need to practice. And now we're almost out of time here, so. Well, I'd like to finish up here and do the rest of the questions. So save your questionnaire on this this first chapter of Timothy, and we'll get into chapter 2 next week. After we'll finish up a couple of questions here and then go on to chapter 2. There are some chapter 2 lessons for June 30th on the little podium over there in the back. So be sure and pick up a copy of that before you go. And we'll look at beginning soon after we finish this on next Sunday. We'll get right into the second chapter. This is only 4 chapters in this book. Got tons of information in them. We hope that it will be effective for you. And might introduce something a little bit different to as we go along tonight. And but I'll share that. We remind you that. I'll share it with you next week. Oh, I won't scare you right now.